I can be a winning Ryder Cup captain away, so is an exceptionally big deal, and it adds a lot to my legacy.
For the best Ryder Cup build-up reaction and exclusive interviews, go to otbsports.com/golfweekly and become an official friend of the pod now.
Football on Off the Ball.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. You can listen on News Talk. We're also streaming the conversations. You can watch us on the digital and social channels for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. And we're joined by the former Republic of Ireland international David Myler, UEFA Pro License coach Shane Keegan, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to talk about the beautiful game. Get in touch with us, please, folks, especially Man United fans. After what happened today, a 1-0 defeat at home to Aston Villa, Courtney Hawes scoring late on for Villa at Old Trafford. He was the player that came into the team today, 88 minutes on the watch. Then he gave away a penalty, which Bruno Fernandes missed, skied it. We'd Solskjaer yesterday bemoaning United's inability to get penalties. They got one, and then they missed one today. David Myler, I shouldn't be surprised. I'm not surprised, really, because they're so inconsistent. You just can't trust them. They've gone 29 games unbeaten on the road. You're thinking this is a new dawn. They've got Varane in there. Ronaldo played today. It looked like a strong team. It was the same team that played against West Ham. But then they lose at home to Villa. That, to me, is the reason why they're not going to win the title. What do you think? Is it too early to say that?
I don't think they would win the title regardless, even if they had won today. I think they'll just come up short towards the end. I feel Liverpool, Manchester City and Chelsea are stronger than them. And I think probably the managers of the three sides I've mentioned are better than Solskjaer. So I think that would be their biggest downfall. Look, I didn't see the game. Obviously, I just saw quick highlights there. I watched Man City beat Chelsea, which was a fascinating game, all accounts. But look, United, if you're going to be challenging for the title, you've got to be winning those games. They obviously had a disappointing result during the week against West Ham in the League Cup. Albeit, yeah, I know they rotated their squad, but you're also now looking at that's two losses in a row. So, you know, it's a tough one. But look, they'll come good. But I just don't feel they have enough to win the Premier League.
They have their best team out there. It's not like they have a lot of injuries.
Yeah, but that's what the best teams do. They find ways to win games.
That's no, it. So they should be winning this. They should be winning at home against Aston Villa. You know, they can't.
If this was one of the other big sides, then you'd kind of go, okay, it's a disappointing result. But like, you've got to be beating your Aston Villas, those types of teams. You know, West Ham last week. You've got to be winning those games if you want to be serious title contenders. That was the biggest downfall last year. We've seen that with Manchester United. It was their home form that left them short, and then they had an incredible away form. But it was all games against lesser sides than Manchester United. And if they're not going to be beating those teams, then they can't be expecting to, you know, be challenging for the league title.
Yeah, so this is the team United played today. De Gea in goal, Wan-Bissaka, Varane, Maguire, Shaw, Pogba, Greenwood and Fernandes all behind Ronaldo, with Fred and McTominay in the holding positions. If you're not a fan, you must be very frustrated, Shane Keegan.
Yeah, it's a mad one. I definitely wouldn't have seen that one coming, to be honest with you, JD. Like, I know we were talking last week, and I suppose I thought that the signing of Ronaldo was kind of your insurance policy to make sure you were able to blow teams like this out of the water. But the same as David, I was watching Chelsea and City. I'm not sure it was the United one, actually.
I don't believe it was. No, I'm sure.
I don't think it was.
No.
But
no.
But I'll tell you what I did was just, you know, I have the Opta Stats app on the phone, and I'd be, as we know, geeky enough like that. And I flicked onto it at half time, and one of the stats that Opta use is what they call big chance, which they class as something where 50% or more of the time the ball ends up in the back of the net. So it's a real, real goal scoring chance. And at half time, the big chances was 0 Manchester United, 3 Aston Villa. So I don't think this was smash and grab by any stretch of the imagination. On the basis of that, they should have had near enough 2 goals, at least from those 3 chances in the first half. I kept an eye on it through the second half, and Bruno Fernandes' penalty was the first big chance that Manchester United had in the game. So I don't know what the hell has gone on in that game that they've been so completely overrun. I'm looking at numbers here. It probably doesn't help Cristiano Ronaldo, 4 shots. Bruno Fernandes, 6 shots. Paul Pogba, 7 shots. Mason Greenwood, 8 shots. That's what, that's that 15, 21, 20, 25 shots. From those 25 shots, 3 of them were on target. I mean, that sounds like they were maybe pressed the panic button very early and were shooting from all kinds of angles. But it's a killer blow for a result for them because, like, you know, Aston Villa won't be, they're decent, like, but they won't be pulling up any trees. Dropping points in a game like that is exactly the reason why they won't be there at the end.
Yeah, Matt Target and Ollie Watkins did have chances. 28 shots in total, Manchester United, but only a handful of them on target. We had, what, 4 on target to Villa's 3 in the game. The problem with Solskjaer is the excuses just, to me, are running out. I know he signed a new deal. Look, he's club legend. I know they've improved. And there's probably more stability to the club from the Van Gaal Mourinho era. But
yeah, the stats are actually familiar with the West Ham game during the week in the League Cup when they had an awful lot of shots, but very few on target. These results don't really surprise you with Man United because they've consistently, as you said, they're inconsistent, but I don't think they're really able to produce very good performances week after week after week, particularly against what I presume was a defensive enough Villa. And
yeah, they're 5 at the back, yeah.
Yeah, I watched the other game, so I mean, if you're talking about seminal days in the title race, the early kickoffs today, I think you were saying initially Shane Keegan had watched both games, a bit like the granddad and only fools and horses with the 3 TVs. It was like, that's quite impressive. I'm not sure you did, Shane, but I obviously from watching the other game, it was a real statement performance. But if you go back to Man United, I'd like to get the views of people on text who watched the game because I think Ronaldo will be a major problem unless he scores because he can't contribute enough anymore. And if you're playing a team who kind of basically parked the bus to an extent and Ronaldo's having a frustrating day like he did against Ireland for 89 minutes or whatever, he's not particularly effective anymore. And there will be games where he's not going to be effective and that will be a problem for Ronaldo. Whereas, strangely enough, in the Manchester City game, I'd say Kevin De Bruyne had a 5 out of 10 game. He was massively upstaged by other players and Man City were so dominant, you know. So it's interesting in that regard. I think today is probably the day when a lot of people will write Manchester United off as title challengers. I don't know about Solskjaer, JD. I still think he's doing a reasonable job in a very, very competitive Premier League, but you'd have to say their title challenge looks kind of kaput after today, really, because it's the same old story with those sort of results.
That's why sacrificing a League Cup. I know League Cup is not really important to Man United as a global club, but it was almost, we'll just play a lot of fringe players. Look, you got to keep them happy, but should you not be trying to win every trophy you can if you're Solskjaer?
The League Cup's not the problem, though. I mean, people didn't really care about that. I mean, the League Cup isn't... They need to be challenging kind of in the league or in Europe particularly. That, to me, the League Cup and the FA Cup, in the overall scheme of things, they're an irrelevance. I know Man United haven't won trophies, but it's all about Europe and Champions League. And if you can do better than that, winning the Premier League. So the League Cup, we had this debate during the week. I'm not sure he should have played fringe players that are probably sort of on their way out. He should have probably played young players. One thing, Shane, that's interesting for me is that he's a massive squad. And I don't know from your perspective as a manager, but I just think it causes so many problems when you've a bloated squad of players on huge money and not necessarily at the start of their careers either.
Yeah. Look, it's probably not a help. It's such a balanced act, like, because you look at United and you say, okay, there's a lot of bodies there and is there too many bodies there? And then you look at City and Chelsea and you're saying, well, the reason they're going to be up around the top at the end is because they have such strength and depth. I think the difference probably is, and I'm going to contradict myself now when we actually talk about the City and Chelsea match probably, but The Chelsea team, you know, you're looking at probably 16 players at least there, thereabouts, that he's able to juggle around to make sure that they're seeing a decent bit of playing time. Likewise with City. With City, it's probably even more that. It's more kind of 18 players that have seen a decent bit of playing time over the course of the season. Like the United one, for all the strength and depth, all the bodies they have there, I don't know if you could go beyond 14 in terms of who you would actually have faith to do something big for you in a really, really important game. In fact, there's some players in the starting 11 that many Man United fans would say they wouldn't have faith in to do something important for them in a big game. So it's they have the quantity, but the quality is nowhere next nor near what you see in the City or Chelsea squads.
Does he need to play McTominay and Fred in a game like that?
David, does he?
No, but it's a catch 22. You look at, like, I know you mentioned the League Cup there, right? And obviously it's a great opportunity for other lads, you know, who was it now? Like Van de Beek coming in, you're giving Lingard and those boys game time. It's a great opportunity for those guys to get minutes to kind of showcase a performance or put on a performance that can kind of say, look, I'm ready to, you know, perform. I'm ready to start. Like Liverpool rotated their squad and got a comfortable result against Norwich. Obviously, Man City did the same. I know they played Wickham, which would be relatively easy for them. Like, it's so difficult because you have a group of players and you're trying to keep everyone on side and keep everyone happy, and you give them game time and then they get knocked out. It's so difficult. I know you brought up, you know, McTominay and Fred against Aston Villa. Like, even though, like, Shane brought up some of the statistics from the game, you play McTominay and Fred for that defensive, you know, solidness between, you know, the two centre-halves and the two of them, so the full-backs can get forward. But it seems that they gave up so much space. It's just, there's still a massive question mark over he doesn't trust Pogba in that kind of deep line, one of the two with Bruno in front of them. You would have felt today you could probably play Fred and Pogba, McTominay and Pogba, just so that you can release players to leave them go forward. Look, if they win the game, we're not having the discussion. But obviously, they've lost. Manchester United, you know, fans will be going wild. One week, it's we're going to win everything. And then the next week, it's Solskjaer out. These players are awful. There's this, that, and the other. So United season is going to be a roller coaster regardless. You know, we can all sit here and say that we think they'll be out of the title in 3 weeks' time. They could end up winning four games and, you know, they're back within 2 or 3 points of whoever's top and you feel that they have another chance. So it's so difficult to call.
Yeah, it's just, I suppose, it's two disappointing results. Young Boys was also a disappointing result. Got some text in here on 53106. So why didn't Ronaldo take the penalty? That's a good text.
But supposedly Bruno...
He'll take the next one.
Supposedly Bruno took the ball off him.
Won't we do that again?
No, he won't.
brave or stupid, I'm not sure.
Why does Fred play? He's absolutely terrible, constantly gives the ball away. Another texture, the loss of two defenders undoubtedly doesn't help. This was Maguire and Shaw, they both went off. Today was the first goal conceded from a set piece this season, but it goes back to the McFred midfield. It'll never be good enough, says Paul in Cork. So Chelsea, Man City, David Myler, you did see that one. Was it a deserved win for City?
Yes. Like, we've lauded Tuchel in the past when they played him last season, the Champions League, the FA Cup and the league, where he got it spot on. Today, I don't think he did. You've seen the change at halftime last week against Spurs where he brought Kante on. He started with Kante today in midfield. And it was basically the back five were pinned in for the first half with the three midfielders in front of him, and Lukaku and Werner were way up the pitch. And the way City knocked the ball around, any time they got into like these scenarios they were trying to create. Now, they didn't manage to get a lot of chances, but anytime they turn over possession, they're pressing everything. They just looked, you could tell that they were well organized, well drilled, and they were well up for that game. I think they really did put down a statement to say, like, we mean business this season. Once, like, City got the goal, then, of course, Chelsea made some changes in midfield. Kante came off and Jorginho came off. So then they looked like Chelsea looked like they, you know, were to cause a threat. They kind of threw a few balls into the box from wide areas with Alonso and Azpilicueta, caused a few problems, but it was kind of damage was already done. And Manchester City then looked to counterattack them. Probably if a few players, Kevin De Bruyne once or twice made the right decision, which is very harsh of me to say that for someone of his ability, but he'd picked out, you know, a few players here and there. Manchester City certainly would have got a second or third goal, but fully deserved. They were excellent.
Let's hear from Pep Guardiola. He was speaking after the game to BT Sport.
Pep, you must be very pleased with that result today and the way you dominated the contest as well.
Yeah, just 3 points, but important ones, you know, the king of the Champions League, because they won it, and the way we played. So the team always can... we can think, play good or play bad, but always it doesn't matter... where we play, we try to do it, and today the guys were outstanding. So in this stadium against this opponent, and did what we have done, and make me so proud, and of course the result to these 3 points.
You mentioned pride. What was the most pleasing aspect of the performance? The result, obviously, but was it the fact that you had so much of the ball that you dominated first half particularly?
Come here and do our game. So sometimes you cannot do it because the opponent is better, do it our game. So We were courage to press high, and they could not make the build-up like they are a masters, and they are so good, and that's why. That's why I'm pleased for the way we played.
Niehaus has got the goal, of course. He's now decided that he wants to play on the right, but he can still...
Who?
Gabriel Jesus scored the important goal. He's trying, you know, he's now saying he likes to play on the right, but he can still deliver down the middle, can't he?
Yeah, it was an action for the set pieces, so that was if he was in the middle. And, you know, Gabriel is always give everything, so you cannot say anything to him. So every single game, run for his teammates, every single action, so that's why with this type of players make me so happy.
Does it make you happy that you've beaten Chelsea and just stopped that run of three defeats? It must niggle with you.
Listen, in my career I won and I lose. I never scored a goal and I never save a penalty. So, you know, I know the statistics for with Thomas or with before with Jose and with Jurgen, with the other ones, we don't play. So I never said, well, I never been in a press conference to win a title, so I win, I won. Here is many, many, many people. So if they beat us the previous times, it's because they are exceptional. So, and you can lose three and four and five, but in this process, I saw perfectly the way we played. We were ourselves. We could not be able to attack better, or many reasons, my decision, wrong decisions, we don't know. But we were ourselves, and that is, what you say, if they beat us, it could be today. Yeah, of course, they are exceptional, exceptional team.
One good statistic, one you like, is you're now the Manchester City manager who's had the most wins ever in the history of the club. That's a nice landmark.
I'm so proud as well. We have done it. We have done it in this milestone here in Stamford Bridge with the last champion, the last Champions League winner is special. So yeah, I think this period they have been together, we are together, have been magnificent. We can lose games, lose finals, but the people cannot say the way we play every single game with incredible courage in Stamford Bridge, in Anfield, anytime. We go to try to do our game, and that is make me proud, a little bit for myself, but especially for all the club.
And a good start to a very difficult and busy week as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's better starting that way than not.
Cheers, Pep. Thank you.
Pep Guardiola speaking to BT Sport there. I prefer the Dublin as a dub, Jesus pronunciation, than the Jesus that I thought I heard there. I was looking through the stats, David Myler. Phil Foden before today had played 18 minutes in the Premier League and Kevin De Bruyne had played 36 minutes. How did the pair of them get on?
Johnny touched on it. I think De Bruyne was very quiet. It wasn't his best game. But then again, you know, he's been struggling at the start of the season. He's only kind of getting up to speed with things. But even so, I think Foden was lively, some nice touches, got involved nicely. But the rest of them, with Rodri, Bernardo Silva, who I thought was exceptional, Cancelo, Jesus, they just had so much going on, the way they pressed Chelsea. Chelsea were trying the opening 20 minutes to play out from the back and they just had nowhere to go. They just kept turning over possession or losing it high up. Like, you know, De Bruyne will only just get his minutes up and just keep getting better and better. We know the standard he set for himself, especially as well with Phil Foden coming back. You know, we at the start of the year, we said like Manchester City have no recognised number nine, like Jesus put in a terrific performance today. So you kind of, like, he's Brazil's number nine and we kind of just forget about him since Aguero left. But they've got such a great squad depth, everything. I kind of, at the start of the season, I kind of felt Chelsea were the team to beat. But after today, I think that it's going to be, you know, Manchester City are going to be right there as well. It should be a fascinating year, really.
Shane, do you have that similar opinion now about City after what you saw today?
I'm telling you the truth, John. This game made my head want to explode.
Well, don't let it happen on the radio, Shane.
This is going to sound sweet. I'm going to sound like I have all the answers here. Far from it. But like, these are the two of the absolute top managers in the world. And today I thought it was a case of which one got more wrong than the other. Like, I cannot understand why Tuchel sent his side out to be so reactive. I really, really can't. I mean, the shape you give your team is only one thing. That's the smaller matter, really, so it is. And I can actually understand why he went with the shape that he went with when it worked so well in the second half against Spurs. But it's the direction within the shape. What do you want your team to do within that shape? Man City dominated the ball. Man City may have dominated the ball anyway if Chelsea tried to press them. But the point was that Tuchel clearly sent Chelsea out not to press and to allow Man City to completely have the ball. And considering the quality of players that they have and the run that they're on, I can't understand the thinking behind that direction. I really, they're the home team. They're in fantastic form. I really expected them to have a go and get up and get in their faces and try and do to them what City were doing to them brilliantly. As David says, like, City's pressing play was absolutely outstanding, as good as I've seen. Now, again, you have to question Tuchel there when you've got a big man like Lukaku up top and you've got a bit of pace around him in Werner. I'm not really sure why they didn't choose to go a bit more direct a bit more often. But just for a guy who's been getting everything right so far, I really, really thought that he got it wrong today. And I look at the other side of things, and I'd absolutely love the opportunity. I've seen this debate before, John, with some commentators on Spanish football and Italian football. They always maintain that the interviewers after the game are far more inclined to ask the managers serious tactical questions rather than just kind of, you know, how do you think the game went today, kind of generic kind of stuff. And that I've seen that done once or twice, and you get some, now obviously I'm reading it through subtitles, but you get some intriguing answers when the right questions are put. Like, I would give anything to say, Pep, explain to me how you felt that putting those players in those positions today was the best way to line up. Because I just don't understand it. Like, why are you playing Phil Foden as a number 9? He had no impact on the game whatsoever as a number 9. He went number 10 when De Bruyne came off, and within seconds he put Jack Grealish through on goal. Right, Gabriel Jesus comes up with the goal. But my argument is Gabriel Jesus would have come up with far more goal scoring opportunities like that if he just played in his normal position at centre forward. Down the left-hand side, he went with the two correct players. He went with a left back and he went with an inverted right winger in Cancelo and Grealish. They were fantastic. They gave Chelsea awful problems. Just replicate that down your right-hand side. Play Mahrez as an inverted left winger with Walker going around him, and you're going to cause the same problems going down the other side. I really couldn't wrap my head around how you justify Gabriel on the right, Phil Foden at centre forward. It made no sense to me. I felt they almost won the game to spite him because there was such quality on the field, you know?
Well, he's kind of gone down the road of pioneering not having a number 9 playing in number 9 position full stop, isn't he?
Yeah, but usually when teams do that, it means they leave the number. There's no number 9. Like, he played a number 9 out on the right wing, and as David says, like, Jesus did reasonably well, got a good goal for himself. I just think he would have done so much better if he had been played in his proper position. I really do.
In fairness to Tuchel, like, I at half time I was thinking he'd be sort of happy enough because Man City hadn't really created anything in the first half, but it was just that reaction in the first 10 minutes that. When I think, in fairness, City just kind of turned the screw a bit and they created a couple of chances. It was their press as well, Shane, though, was like, I think you could see a lot of last season that they abandoned that style of the game. They played a bit more conservatively as the season went on, and obviously it was a different season with the COVID situation and the fixture list and so on coming back off the previous season. This is now a more conventional season, but like, Chelsea, the two lads up top just look so isolated. Like, Lukaku is kind of lost in a game like that. They, as you say, if you go direct, he might cause some problems. But, like, in terms of when you think that De Bruyne and Foden didn't really play well, like, City were, like, they were totally dominant, really. Like, Chelsea had hardly any chances in the game. And you could probably argue that City can play a lot better than that.
I think they can definitely play a lot better than that. And look, again, to contradict myself a little bit, right? Okay, you're bang on. They didn't create a huge amount of chances, City, for all their supremacy. But, like, Chelsea were creating zero. Like absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And, you know, Tuchel would probably shut me up by saying, well, hold on, after we conceded the goal, we had a go at them. I mean, from the time, believe it or not, from the time City scored to the final whistle, which was still, what, 35 minutes, maybe for thereabouts, Chelsea had more possession than City had. And yet, again, if you look at the Opta stat on big chances, it was from there on that that City had three goal scoring chances and Chelsea had none. So you're saying after the goal, it was only after the goal Chelsea got themselves into it. But the fact that they got themselves into it and started to come out of their shell means City did create. Now, I just think if Chelsea go at them from the start, if they go at them from the start and really get up, yeah, it means City, or of course City, are now going to have a few chances. But at least Chelsea are in the game. David, probably towards the, as the game started to go on, the one thing they started to do towards the end of the game, David, I thought that they weren't doing was they got Lukaku on the edge of the 18-yard box where they were playing balls threaded through to him, and he was able to bully the life out of the two centre-halves. The fact that they were sitting off so far for the vast majority of the game, they were never able to create those scenarios, and that's what you have to be creating for if you've got Chelsea's tools, you know?
Oh, well, that's it. You spoke there where Lukaku was trying to, he was getting the ball into feet on the edge of the box. But in the first half, he was getting it the odd time into feet on the halfway line. Now, yeah, there were 2v2 with the two centre-halves, with Diaz and Laporte, him and Werner. The balls weren't clear balls or clean balls into their feet where they could actually get hold of them, try and spin them. Werner had one that he spun and played it out, and they nearly got in. But at the same time, it was just, Tuchel did get it wrong because they sat off too much and they just left Man City come onto them. And then when they did have good possession, they couldn't get out and they had nowhere to go. And the distances between kind of the back five, the midfield three and the two strikers were way too big. And they just like, and then when you have a player like Kyle Walker who's talking round the odd occasion, like nobody's going to outbeat him for speed. It was huge opportunities for Chelsea to put one over the top, just in behind. It might be old fashioned, but I put it in a foot race between Laporte and Lukaku or Diaz and Werner, and you just don't know what would happen. But of course, once you're 1-0 down and there's 30 minutes to go, you know, the wing backs then started to push on, started to get higher up the pitch. And like you said, they did have more possession, but it was kind of too little too late, because then you knew City were, you know, they have the quality to, you know, pick them off and pick them apart where they can still create chances themselves. On another day, City probably would have taken, you know, a few of those chances.
Just to break away from that, to let you know that it is Leicester 0 Burnley 1 in the Premier League, a Jamie Vardy own goal, and a report on the game between Leeds and West Ham. We've had a goal there, Adam Jury.
Leicester City 0 Burnley 1, and it's Jamie Vardy with the goal, but at the wrong end. It was a corner whipped in, it was a dangerous corner too, and Vardy at the near post nodded it past Kasper Schmeichel. It was a terrific effort just at the wrong end. It's Leicester 0 Burnley 1.
Okay, well, that is the Leicester score that I was giving you. It is Leeds 1, West Ham United 0. Rafinha has scored for Leeds. Everton 1, Norwich 0. Andros Townsend with a penalty for the Toffees. And it is Watford 0, Newcastle 1. Sean Longstaff for the Magpies. So just to go through the scores, Chelsea 0, Manchester City 1 with the goal from Gabriel Jesus. Manchester United 0, Aston Villa 1. These are full times. With the goal from the Courtney Hawes in the second half. Everton 1, Norwich 0. Leeds 1, West Ham 0. Leicester 0, Burnley 1. It is Watford 0, Newcastle 1. And Brentford and Liverpool kick off at 5:30. Reading 1, Middlesbrough 0 is a full time from the Championship. Latest scores, Birmingham 0, Preston 0. Blackburn 1, Cardiff 0. Blackpool 0, Barnsley 0. Bournemouth 1, Luton 0 is the latest. Bristol City 0. Fulham 0. It is goalless between Nottingham Forest and Millwall. Also goalless between Sheffield United and Derby. Stoke 0. Hull 0 is the latest. Swansea 1. Huddersfield Town 0 is the latest score. In the Women's National League, Bohemians 0. P-Man 3. And Cork City 3. Dublin Waves 1. These are latest scores. And in the Premiership in Scotland, Rangers are 1-0 up away to Dundee. Hearts 1. Livingston 0. And Motherwell 1. Ross County 0. Let's hear from Thomas Tuchel speaking to BT Sport after that game, that 1-0 defeat to Manchester City.
I think we lost. City deserved to win. I think for 60 minutes we were very, very strong in the last 20 metres of the field, but only there, unfortunately, and there are other like 80 metres left where we were not good enough today to escape pressure, to have ball possession, and not only ball possession to breathe, but also ball possession to switch off play, to hurt them, to grow in confidence. This never happened in first half, also in second half. And then we conceded. Until then, we defended very, very well, like I said, the box and the goal is excellent. but this was the only part of the match. So the performance was not complex enough. It was simply overall not on our very best level, and you need very best level to push a game like this to your side. After the goal, it felt a little bit like more like that the belief in winning is bigger than the fear of losing something. I don't know why. And we tried to push and got the crowd behind us. City got a bit tired, and we could create more deliveries and more situations around the box. Then it was a very open game, of course, an emotional game. But like I said, never on our highest level, and that's why you cannot expect to get a result. It's always possible to turn things around and to have one delivery with more precision and to header maybe and get an equalizer. But in general, we can accept because, like I said, it was not our best game.
You seemed very animated on the touchline, and you were trying to bring the side forward, actually. You seemed to get pressed back, and the wing-backs were penned in. There was all those things. What did you say at half-time to try and solve this?
More or less the same. We said, like, we're top in the last 20 metres, but there are another 80 metres to go. We adjusted a little bit our system to a double six, so that helped us a little bit, or we thought it might help us. Then we conceded a goal from set play. And even if we wanted to go for long balls for Romelu, it was not precise enough. I did not feel the belief that we can really escape with short balls. I did not really feel 100% the belief if we play long balls that we believe in it. It was doubtful, and we were a little bit like protecting something, like okay, let's play. It felt like we have something to lose, but there was a lot more to win than to lose. And okay, can happen. We lacked a little bit of freshness also. Engie is ill since some days, and I decided to let him start. Jorginho has some problems. Thiago could not start. So yeah, maybe this is on me, maybe not the very best choices maybe today, but okay.
Thank you very much, Thomas.
Thank you.
Very honest stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, he's kind of basically blaming himself. He said we didn't have the belief, kind of, and it's my fault. He said we weren't complex enough. I don't know if he meant that. Were they complex enough, JD?
Well, I was in the middle of going through the Saturday panel, so I didn't see the intricacies of the match, unlike you three sages.
Yeah, Shane seemed to think they were maybe a bit too complex at times.
David Myler, what's your verdict on Thomas Tuchel's verdict?
He's spot on, isn't he? He got it wrong. There was a lack of belief. Very honest and open interview. Spoke about, like, obviously players. He's stuck with lads who probably need a rest. And look, he was right. They defended very deep. They were solid. Didn't, like, give up too much space. Didn't give up too many chances. But they lack serious quality going forward in the opening hour. And then, like he said there, once you go one behind, it's kind of like all the wheels come off. And you said, we've got to try and get ourselves back into it. So players start taking more risks, start running forward. They start leaving space behind them. Wing backs, like he said there, were pinned in first half and they look to get forward second half. You know, I talk about complexion and that. Fancy words.
We're going to take a break here on OTB Football Saturday. We're going to talk about the Irish players who've been involved in England in the last week. So Aaron Connolly, Caoimhín Kelleher, and obviously Jack Byrne as well, now looking for a new club after his departure from Apoel Nicosia. So stay in touch. Keep in touch with us. Man United fans love to hear from you on 53106 about what happened today against Villa and where you feel and where you stand about it. We're going to come back to you after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
And you're very welcome back, listeners, to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5, joined by the former Republic of Ireland international David Myler, UEFA Pro Licence coach Shane Keegan, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to talk about the beautiful game. Let's break away from that, though, for the moment, to update you on the Ryder Cup. 6-2 lead for the USA overnight at the moment in the Saturday foursomes. The first game tied level, Brooks Koepka and Daniel Berger against John Rahm and Sergio Garcia. That is through 11 holes. Four up are Dustin Johnson and Colin Morikawa on Paul Casey and Tyrrell Hatton through 9. So the Americans looking good on that one. Europe are up in two holes. Victor Hovland and Bernd Wiesberger two up on Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. That is through 8. And the last match is tied in the foursomes. Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay for the home team in Wisconsin against Lee Westwood and Matt Fitzpatrick. So it's all pretty much level pegging in the foursomes at the moment. Europe up in one. the USA up in one and two of them tied. Europe really need to win the session and need to win the four balls later on to start clawing back this deficit and give themselves any chance of winning the Ryder Cup. And our coverage of the Ryder Cup is brought to you in association with Sky Sports. Watch the Ryder Cup exclusively on Sky Sports. I was asking Johnny Ward in the break, lads, if he'd any interest, and he just says no. But David Myler, you were on your Twitter page giving love hearts to the Ryder Cup.
God. Yeah.
Well, what's wrong, Johnny?
Golf is bad enough, but like put golfers in a team, all these pampered millionaires with an American crowd cheering on with this stupid patriotism. I support international football teams. I can't do the Ryder Cup at all.
Oh, the Ryder Cup's amazing. It's brilliant. You know what I mean? You get Europe v America. Ah, I love it. I watched
Europe v America. Like, honestly, how does that mean? That means nothing to anyone.
Ah, it does.
Keep going, Johnny.
Exactly, Shane.
I tell you now as well. When Shane Lowry made the team, I was straight on the phone texting him, delighted for him.
Oh.
Watched him play yesterday. I was flicking between Man City, Chelsea and the Ryder Cup this morning because obviously yesterday was very disappointing. Oh, they didn't. Look, it's not looking great, is it?
No, it's not. It's looking pretty, it's pretty, pretty grim. And we're pretty grim for Patrick Harrington as well. He took the job to captain a team in the United States and it's getting a bit ropey.
I think if they can win 2 points in the foursomes and then kind of just like they're 4 points back, when all said and done going into the singles, they have to be within two, I think, JD.
Yeah.
Have to be within two. And if they're not, then it's curtains.
It is. Shane Keegan, do you have any interest in this?
I do, JD, and you're not going to be too happy with me. The main reason I have interest in this is because I'm all over America minus 2 points.
God, so your only interest is, and JD is on 16-12, is that right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I went for it on the basis of, look, I know what I'm talking about. Well, I think I do sometimes.
Don't big yourself up too much.
Well, I've done this virtual insanity thing all year, and that hasn't been doing so great. But no, I just feel that Americans are just much better players. People are thinking this is going to be close. Americans have a world ranking of less than 9. Europe have a world ranking of 30. They've set the course up for the Americans. The Europeans came into it out of form, and people are living in 3 years ago.
I mean, but you can't put a value on pan-national patriotism, being European, and what that means to all these millionaires. You know, in fairness, there is context to my kind of golf aversion because I was awful at hurling. I don't know if it's just having a stick in my hand. I was really, really bad at hurling. Now I'm not from a hurling area, but I was pathetically bad. And I went to a golf range. My American cousins brought me to a golf range. It was just like literally a driving range. I literally couldn't hit the ball. I was so, so bad. And there was an old man watching me, and he was obviously into his golf, didn't know me or whatever, and he just had his head in his hands, and eventually he had enough and he said, son, you're doing it all wrong. So he came over and gave me maybe a 5 minute demonstration of how to actually hold the, what did they even call
the club.
It? The club, right? So anyway, this went on anyway. So here's me, okay, I'll finally clock this. Went back and I was every bit as bad, and he essentially just walked away, and I walked away from golf forever because I was like, Johnny, you're pathetically bad at this, and I couldn't get over how bad I was. Useless. Like,
I'm useless as well.
But you know what, but that's the beauty of it. I've played with footballers who've never played golf before. Best example I could use is Tom Huddleston. I played with him, what are we now, 21. I played with him in 2016, back end of that year, 17, and it was at the point, JD, where we were playing and I actually wanted to walk off after three holes because he was that bad. Right? And honest to God. And to be fair to him, I stuck with him because he's a great lad. He plays off six now.
Wow.
Like, he's put the time and effort in, but he's a serious golfer now. It's one of those.
Is he thanking you for that?
No, it wasn't my help. It was all him.
You put the time and effort in me, David?
No, well, don't do it.
Tom put the time and effort, and obviously he was footballer, like, so.
Oh, he was a footballer. Time. What does that mean? Well, like,
you're... No, he's the spare time. He's the spare
okay.
time.
Okay, well, I have as well, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't know where people do get the time for this. I really don't. That's the one thing. I've attempted to play around the golf on three occasions, and I didn't make the 18th hole on any of the three occasions. I walked off before the end, but I just can't. I just wouldn't be able to. I don't like doing something that I can't dedicate enough time to trying to get good at.
Well, do you know what? I did something there. I tweeted out not Sango. My dad played off four. That's the lowest he was. So I need to get below four so then I can tell him I'm better than him at golf. That's kind of my thing, like, right? So I said I want to get to scratch because then he can never say another word to me about golf. So when I said I want to get to scratch, I had a lot of people get in touch with me on social media and whatever, and it was actually crazy listening to people. They were like, have you got like a training schedule for golf? And I was like, well, no. Like, he said, you can't just go to the range and hit balls every day. So I was like, okay, what's your training schedule? Well, one fellow was like, I start work at 8. So I get up at 6 and I go to the range about 6:30 for an hour. And he was like, I'll go through various different things. But he was doing that 3 days out of his 5 days working. During his lunch breaks, then he'd get an hour off and he'd do half an hour putting. He would swing by to like any golf place that was near, you know, the golf course, just go practice his putting on his lunch break just to get practice time in. And then on the weekend, on Saturday, he would actually play 18 holes because he wasn't working, and Sunday he would too.
Here, JD, last bit before I know you probably need to jump off it, but how?
No, we don't.
Just reminds me, just listening to David talk there. How did your man ever get on? Remember, there was Dan with the plan. What, Dan McLaughlin, the guy who was going to give up his day job to give 10,000 hours of practice to golf.
He never made it. He never got there. He never got there.
Did he not? No.
I believe there's a book written about it.
The organic nature of our conversations are what make OTB Saturday. So, like, we're not going to get off the topic. Just to David Myler, because you can't be going out on the beer all the time as footballers, obviously, because but do you bond on the golf course? Was there much with the Irish camp? Like, would Roy Keane be getting out the clubs, or Martin O'Neill? Or?
Martin. I love Martin, and I've said that. When Martin was manager of Sunderland, we had something, right? Players v staff. So it was kind of like a Ryder Cup format, just straight up like four balls, right? Staff v players. So it turned into this, like, we'll beat you, you'll beat us. It was ended up being, it was I think it was 10 grand between all the players and all the staff. Now, Steve Guppy, who you all know, the former Leicester and Celtic, was obviously involved with Martin as coach and stuff. He said he didn't have a handicap and he wasn't that good. So a lot of lads said, oh, you can have 36, right? But anyone gets 36, you immediately question it anyway, because they get 2 shots per hole. Steve Guppy had about 4 birdies that day, and I think he finished up with about 53 points. Now, I'd love to, if you ever get Martin on the show, you can ask Martin about it, because he still goes on about it to this day. Mm. At that time, I was playing the most golf I'd ever played in my life. I was playing off about 6, and I might have said I'd play off 18, and I shot 4 over.
You'd been a bandit, David, were you?
When I heard he was 36 and he was after 2 birdies on the opening 4 holes, I was like, yeah, I'm off 18. And I shot 4 over. So players ended up winning, but there was a lot of controversy over it.
This is going to break a dressing room, could it?
No, it was, but it was a make change room.
Make a change
because,
room.
Because, you know what I mean? All the players were together, and we said, you know, screw them. You know what I mean? There's a couple of bandits and that. But it's great, though. Like, even when I was at Hull, there was a lot of lads played. Like, I've never, Shane Long, I don't think, right, really ever plays golf. He hits the ball like Bryson DeChambeau. I've never Hurler. Seen a footballer. Shane Long,
yeah.
What you call it, yeah. I've never seen anyone hit the ball further than Shane Long, ever. He hits it a country mile. He's like DeChambeau. We had one of them things, you know, like a stupid long drive. And I reckon I hit it about 305, 310. And he was like the next hole. It was one of them you go down and come back. And he was about 40 or 50 yards past me. It was unbelievable.
He was an awful loss to hurling, obviously, Shane Keegan.
Oh yeah,
I think that's well known. What was he? Three year Tipperary minor, I think, wasn't he? Hard enough to do that anywhere, but to do a three year stint within Tipperary where they have the selection they have says enough about him. Yeah,
I will say one thing very briefly, JD. Like, if you're familiar with Strava from like cycling or running.
Oh
or,
no, I have Strava too.
Yeah. So I was on it today and I saw that my brother-in-law Eric had put up Strava and he was just like literally recording his movements on the golf course, and I was just like, but in fairness, yeah, looking back, he walked 10k on the golf course, so like it is actually more exercise than I'd given it credit for, even though some of the golfers don't look like they exercise that much, but he walked 10k just doing his whatever he was doing, so maybe there's more to it than there is a bit of exercise to it, I guess.
I have one of the Garmin watches for golf, and I track my steps on it. Like, in an average round, I'll do between 13 and 16,000 steps, depending on the course. Now, I don't know how many steps is a kilometer or whatever, but like, you do end up walking a fair bit, like, and it's good. It's fresh air. It's good exercise. And of course, if you play good golf, you feel good about yourself. So Did he do play?
No, because hay fever.
Hay fever?
Yeah, hay fever is absolutely...
That's not an excuse. It's every antihistamine anyone could want over the counter.
Are not good enough. The hay fever is chronically bad. I used to get a steroid injection for hay fever. It was so bad, once a year. So
that's it, like your excuse to the Olympic Council. Yeah. No, it's hay fever, I'm telling you.
It's usually taking steroids for performance enhancing. This is actually to get myself off the golf course. But it was...
We've all myriad of excuses.
I'd had hand coordination whatsoever, and I hit the thing about 10 yards, 10 feet, and I didn't want to embarrass myself because I don't believe in life. You should be doing things you're no good at. So that's why I have no interest in getting on golf. But I watch it every single week, and I really admire... But Bryson DeChambeau, as you're saying there, like, I hit a ball 400 yards yesterday. But I don't know how he did that. I just can't even get the physics of that.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. And I know there's been a lot of uproar over it because he's kind of gone down the scientific approach and how can I hit the balls further. I believe he's one of the first to ever have every club is the same size as his 7-iron. It's something he feels benefits him with his striking. I've no problem with all that. I think, you know, fair play to him. He's trying to maximize the best. He's trying to make himself the best he can be. But like even JD, you said there you watch a lot of golf. He's slapping the ball here, there, and everywhere. There is a good bit of control on it, but he finds himself like in a lot more bother than a lot of the others.
Well, he's playing it like you play PlayStation golf, where you hit it as far as you can, and you bomb and gouge it out to a few feet, and that's the way you like. So you bludgeon the whole thing. But
yeah,
it's definitely. No, I admire your handicap. That's a pretty good score, David. And if we ever take it up here, myself, Johnny, and Shane will play over in Dublin at some stage. But I think it'll be a long while yet.
Well,
but
if we're gonna play, we're going to Cork.
Okay, of course, yeah, the real capital. Yeah. Europe are actually doing a bit better now. They're two up, and they're up in two of the matches, and they're down in one and tied in one in the Ryder Cup. So the Ram and Garcia won up on Koepka and Berger in the foursomes through 12. Johnson and Morikawa for the US four up on Casey and Hatton. That is through 10. Victor Hovland and Bernd Wiesberger won up on Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth through 9. And the last match in the foursomes tied Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay against Lee Westwood and Matt Fitzpatrick. USA 6, Europe 2 is the latest score. In the Ryder Cup, before we go to the news, just give you some scores from the Premier League. Earlier on, Chelsea 0, Manchester City 1, a real statement from the title holders, Gabriel Jesus with a goal. Manchester United losing 1-0 to Aston Villa at Old Trafford. United fans get in touch, 5-3-1-0-6, Courtney Hawes with the goal. Half-times, Everton 1, Norwich 0, Andros Townsend penalty. Half-time, Leeds 1, West Ham 0, Rafinha with the goal at Elland Road. Half-time, Leicester 1, Burnley 2. So Burnley have gone in front again. Jamie Vardy scored an own goal earlier on in that game. Then he equalised himself, so scoring for both clubs. Cornet has scored the goal for Burnley to put them in front. And it's Watford 0, Newcastle 1, with Sean Longstaff on the mark for the Magpies there away from home. And in the Women's National League, Bohemians 0, P-Man 3, Cork City 4, Dublin Waves 1, and in Scotland, Rangers leading Dundee by 1-0 in the Premiership at half-time. Off the Ball Saturday, Football Saturday on News Talk is back after the news. Stay with us.
Football on Off the Ball.
What did you expect from your defenders when you were playing not too long ago?
Look, JD, when I played in the Championship with Hull, we played out a lot of the time. That was kind of just the way it was. We almost had the arrogance that we could play out and we were comfortable doing it. When you went into the Premier League, it's totally different. Like, you look at, we spoke about Man City earlier, the way they set up for Chelsea. Chelsea just needed to knock it long today, you know, not for the whole game, but kind of push Man City back so that they could, you know, build up a relationship to be able to build out and play out and, you know, be comfortable in the ball. Like, when I play in the Premier League, like teams are only setting up traps for you that if you do play out, that they'll be able to counterattack. And if you do, if one of your centre-halves loses the ball, 9 times out of 10, they're in on goal and there's not enough time for, you know, whether it be the fullback or the other centre-half to get back and cover. So a lot of the time, we clip the balls wide to the fullbacks up by the halfway line and try to play off the second phase and try and win our first initial header and play, like, almost put the ball into their half and play from there. At times, you know, you see teams that are over trying and they're trying too hard and they end up just losing the ball. Like Brighton are probably a very good example of a team that do play very good possession, but you can tell that Graham Potter's working on that all the time. Like I reckon every day of the week they're practicing different things and they're running through different scenarios that they're creating every problem that the players know how to deal with them. But when you play against these big sides, they're only waiting for you to do it, that you'll turn over possession. And even like Paul said, all these strikers are extremely quick, that they will pounce if it touches loose, if it touches heavy, if a pass isn't right. And they'll turn over the ball and they'll counterattack you and they'll be in on goal. So it's you need to find a balance. I think that's the hardest thing. If you remember there was a great example when Ireland played England under Stephen. You know, obviously Stephen had said that we were going to, play this more attractive football or whatever. But that was certainly a game where England were setting up traps for us to play out. And they left the ball go to the right side. And Duffy had it various times where they left him dribble out a bit and they went after him. And we ended up turning over possession 3, 4, 5 times in a row because we were trying so hard to play from the back. Whereas sometimes you just got to say, do you know what, lads, let's push up towards the halfway line, play it long and look to play from the second ball.
We could not be you couldn't pick a better example of this debate than Ireland, because Stephen Kenny wants us to play a lot closer to Man City than the Ireland that we've been used of. And there have been games where we've shown, that we can do it to a degree. All our underage teams are playing it out from the back. All nearly League of Ireland underage teams are playing it out from the back, and they want to do that. But all our goals have effectively come from direct football. So he's kind of we're trying to evolve. But I think ultimately you have to win the game in front of you, and the game is evolving. So Manchester City will have vulnerabilities, and really good teams will have vulnerabilities in terms of set pieces, in terms of going long, in terms of putting the ball in behind. So if the game is constantly evolving, you have to find a chink in the armor of the team you're playing against, particularly if they're superior to you, and there'll always be a little kind of chink in their defense or something that you have to find, because no one way will fit every game, particularly if a lot of the time you're playing teams that are just better than you. So you have to find ways, and the game is evolving very fast, but that doesn't mean that going long or being very good physically isn't going to win you a game. So Pats played Shamrock Rovers last night. There's an awful lot of tactical stuff going on in the game, but ultimately it's decided by a set piece and an own goal, and that's kind of the beauty of it. If everyone played like Man City, it'd be kind of boring. We need we may talk about Joe Kinnear, and we spoke about him during the week, but I love that Wimbledon team from that, because they were completely different and they brought something different.
But the Ireland team under Charlton was that way.
And in fairness, we weren't pretty to watch, but we pressed really hard. And defenders, you watch games where it was pedestrian, and even it, as much as Chelsea couldn't deal with Man City's press today, Ireland were pioneers, and Jack should be really lauded for that. He wanted to put teams under pressure, and he said he was kind of annoyed because they started calling it press, and he said, I call it putting teams under pressure. And it worked, and particularly if you brought them to Lansdowne Road, played on a Wednesday afternoon, probably a gale, the pitch was bad, they didn't like it, and that made us more likely to win the game than if we played a different style.
Didn't lose a competitive game at Lansdowne Road for 7 years.
What really interests me in all this, JD, is just taking it back to the coaching of it, right? And trying to strike the right balance in the coaching of all of this. So the FAI, I'm talking a good while back now, again, probably Sean Maguire coming through, so let's say 10 years ago, thereabouts, the best players from the different counties went into their regional centres, and after a couple of weeks, about once a month, the regional centres would play each other, at, let's say, under 13, under 15 level, and the FAI brought in, the FAI brought in a rule, basically, where the two coaches, the two managers of the two regional development sides would both agree to drop back into over what they call the retreat line, about two-thirds of the field back, to allow the opposition to play a short goal kick and then let it evolve from there. And I remember at the time thinking, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? I don't know really whether I decided it was or wasn't. I'm still unsure. You could see what the idea behind it was. But then you'd also say, is there any realism in that? And I suppose that was the role in getting the ball rolling in terms of trying to change what the keeper did with the ball at his feet. But I know David is involved with one of the underage sides. I'm not 100% sure which age group you're involved with, David. But I'd be interested to know, with the group you're involved in, is the aim to always try and play out from the back? Or would the manager in that age group say, okay, lads, we'd like to try and play out from the back, but if we feel that the opposition we're coming up against is better suited to being a bit more direct against them, let's be prepared to do that? Or is the result just sacrificed for always wanting to play out from the back?
No, we'll predominantly try to play out from the back. That's always the way we want to play. But at the same time, if you're 65 minutes into a game, you're 2-0 up and they decide to press with five players, that, you know, we won't just, you know, the keeper, at the end of the day, the keeper has the decision to make. We encourage them to play. We go through different scenarios. If they press with a two, if they press with a three, I know yourself would have done that in your time, right? The thing is, if it's all circumstantial to the game, if you're under pressure, then do you know what? Let's push up the field and we'll kick it up the field. There's no problem with that. We've gone through different scenarios. If a team pushes five up, then that means that there's space in different areas. Do you know what I mean? And we're fortunate enough, both our keepers can kick the ball long, that you can like isolate, you know, fullbacks in wide areas. Like a great example today, if you remember, Chelsea tried to press up high in City and Ederson just clipped a 50-yard ball straight onto Jack Grealish's toe. He tried to flick it inside into Jesus, but Jesus wasn't ready for it. That's the thing, is we're encouraging them to play out all the time, but you have to understand that you can't play out every single time. So like we're trying to qualify for major tournaments. So like there has to be, you know, the balance has to be right. And so far we have found that balance.
As well, JD, like, and the lads would know this better than me, but it must be about the intelligence of the individual player. Because as much as you can't overcoach players, because they don't have the attention span anymore and they'll just get bored. So you can set them up tactically to do whatever. But the intelligence of the player to adapt to a situation, and if he's playing it out from the back, he or she is playing it out from the back, and you're presented with a ball down the channel or a slightly dicey ball into midfield, you have to have the game intelligence to be able to weigh that up in your head. And that's, you can't teach that. So that's why the game is just so fascinating. It's evolving, it's changing to like a really beautiful game. But there will still be aspects in the game where the player's intelligence. When you're signing a player, Shane, how important is that? Because I can still kind of call you a manager, can I? You're not purely media now, are you?
No. And while you the player's game intelligence, is that what you're asking about?
Yeah. So like you can watch a player and decide that, well, like the one for me that I could never get my head around was strikers who basically they shoot on goal when statistically all they have to do is pass the ball across and the other lad will score. But then I was no good in front of goal at all. So like I wasn't a striker. I didn't have that selfish instinct. But a broader point, game intelligence, he or she will realise what way this game is going, or in a particular moment, I have to do something here because this is the right thing to do and you have a split second decision to make.
Yeah, look, I think obviously enough, I think it's absolutely key in the central area of the field. You'll get away with your athletes a little bit more out in the wide areas. But in the center of the field, like the difference between a very, very good player and an elite player is their ability to assess their whole surroundings all of the time. There's a fantastic clip. Now it's quite old at this stage, but I probably still use it when I'm talking to kids about it. There's a brilliant clip of Frank Lampard. There was a stat that became quite popular there called scans per minute. Basically, how many times does a player check their surroundings in a 60-second period? And there was a clip going around of Frank Lampard when he was at his best with Chelsea. And I mean, I suppose when you think of scanning and game intelligence, you usually tend to think of continental players. But to be fair to Frank Lampard, in this particular 60-second clip, he actually averages more than one per second. I think he finishes with 63 scans in a 60-second period, where he's just assessing, where am I? Where's my teammates? Where's the opposition? If I get the ball next, do I have a picture painted for me? Do I know what I'm going to be able to do with the ball? And like that ability to be able to take all of that information in. And again, when you're coaching it, Johnny, like it's arguably, I don't know what David thinks, it's arguably one of the hardest things to coach, because you probably have to consciously scan for 3 months, i.e. walk out onto the field, and every time you walk out, remember, okay, I have to be scanning today. This thing that my coach is telling me to check my shoulders, I have to be scanning. And you've got to do that for 3 to 6 months, and you'll forget to do it, and you need a good coach to shout in and remind you to do it again, and you need to be hard on yourself to keep trying to remember to do it. And then slowly but surely, you're doing it without realizing that you're doing it, and you're doing it without constantly having to remind yourself to do it.
I'd never heard of anything like that before.
I've never heard that. Like the only scanners I would have known is a David Cronenberg movie. So I don't know what the hell.
No, but here, just to touch quickly there on what Shane said. Shane, I don't know if you've seen it, but obviously you're intrigued by it. There was something Arsene Wenger used to say. If a player calls for a ball, an average player will scan once, a good player will scan twice, and the elite players or the top players scan on average four times. He said Fabregas was the best at it, that he had seen. It is something, it's like, as you said there, Shane, like, if you're trying to encourage young fellas, that's fantastic, because it is something so difficult. And you'll often hear people from the sidelines shouting, check your shoulders, check your shoulders. And you'll see people just look once. But the beauty is, like, I've often spoken, you know, people ask me who's the toughest player I've played against. And I tend to usually go with David Silva, because he wasn't strong, he wasn't fast, he was predominantly left-footed. And you couldn't get near him. Like, you spoke there, Johnny, about game intelligence. That man's intelligence was just incredible. Like, you think you'd be near him, and then he would just pop 2 yards and he'd take one touch. And then you think, oh, he's just going to pop it back to the man who's giving it to him. And he'd turn. Like, he just had this great ability to appear in pockets. And that's why, like, if you go back and look at some of the games he played for Manchester City, like, he's so intelligent. He's a genius that you couldn't physically get near him. He knew how many touches to take, when to take them, when to release the ball, when to just move into different space to open up a passing lane for someone else. But some of that stuff is so difficult to teach. I think some people have it and they get it straight away and they can identify with it. Others, it does take a long time to develop.
Absolutely fascinating stuff, Shane, scanning. I never heard of that before, and it's real insightful. Really, really good stuff. Just to give you some updates and scores, folks, that are coming in from the Premier League and elsewhere. We had Chelsea 0, Manchester City 1 earlier on in the big one at Stamford Bridge, with Gabriel Jesus scoring. It is results as well. Man United 0, Aston Villa 1. Courtney Hawes with the late goal. Bruno Fernandes missing a penalty. Andros Townsend has scored a penalty for Everton 1-0 against Norwich into the second half, midway through it. Leeds 1, West Ham 0 as the latest, Rafinha with the goal. Leicester 1, Burnley 2, Jimmy Vardy an own goal, then he scored himself, and then Maxwell has put Burnley in front. And Sean Longstaff has given Newcastle a 1-0 lead away to Watford. A 5:30 kickoff between Brentford and Liverpool. We'll have the teams from that one for you shortly. In the Championship, Reading 1, Middlesbrough 0 as a result. Birmingham 0, Preston 0 the latest, also latest scores. Blackburn 4, Cardiff 1, not going so well for Mick McCarthy recently. Blackpool 1, Barnsley 0. It is now Bournemouth 2, Luton 1. Bristol City 0, Fulham 1. Nottingham Forest 1, Millwall 1. Sheffield United 0, Derby 0 is the latest. Stoke 2, Hull 0. And Swansea 1, Huddersfield 0 in Scotland in the Premiership there. Rangers still 1-0 up away to Dundee. And that is in the Scotland. And we're just going to go through the League 1 scores because there's a bit of Irish interest here. Just make sure there's been no goals. But it is Charlton 1, Portsmouth 1 with Ronan Curtis scoring. Gavin Bazunu playing for Portsmouth today. And Troy Parrish has scored for MK Dons. They're 1-0 up at home to Wickham. Cuevin Kelleher saving a penalty during the week, lads. Is he just minded best to stay there at Liverpool because he's in that elite environment? Or what should he be doing in the next while, do you think? David?
Okay. I'm torn. I was asked about this before. I think it would be a fantastic experience for him to be working with Alisson. I think he'll learn an awful lot from him, which will only make him a better keeper. But at the moment, he's only going to play League Cup games. He'll play the FA Cup, which doesn't start till January. He might get a token Champions League game once Liverpool have qualified out of their group, which I fully expect them to do. And then on the flip side of that, you've got someone like Gavin then who's playing week in, week out with Portsmouth. We've seen his performances with Ireland. It's kind of, Gavin is chosen to go on loan. Maybe if Cuevin had gone on loan, he would be developing at the same rate. It's just so hard to know. I think at the moment he probably needs more games for himself and his own development. Maybe look at going alone for 6 months in January. But no doubting, look, we're very blessed. Stephen's very lucky to have two exceptional young goalies. They'll be fighting toe-and-toe with one another for the next, probably 10, 12 years for Ireland's number one, which is only a huge plus for us.
Just on that as well, JD, it was fascinating to be at Pats and Shamrock Rovers last night, and St. Pat's went completely left field this season and got Liverpool's third choice keeper, whatever he is, Vítor Jaros from Czech, and like I don't know, like, you go to watch League of Ireland games and all that, but when there's a player who's coming from Liverpool, like, there's something, he has a presence about him, and he's so impressive, like, and he's, like, just his physicality, his, the way he carries himself, and I always see after games, all the kids want his interview, want his autograph, rather, and even though he's understudied to Kelleher, he's getting massive game time at a much lower level than even, like, Bazuna's even at a higher level, arguably. And it's a tough one for Kelleher. I think it must be a tough one because there's no way that Yaros isn't developing as goalkeeper because he's involved in games. He's a lot of the ball at his feet. It's physical. He's made mistakes this season and he's learning from his mistakes. He was absolutely outstanding last night. And Kelleher's kind of there with Alisson every day. And you're, I don't know, it's a tough one.
Yeah, it was a good week as well for Aaron Connolly, Shane, scoring twice against Swansea in the League Cup. With him, I think it's confidence and it's getting games, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Look, it's he's kind of, it's going to be real highs and lows for Aaron Connolly because of his style of play. He just doesn't do conservative, I suppose, is the best way of putting it, JD. Like, he's a guy who, when he gets that ball, he's going to go at you. He's going to try and beat a man. He's going to try and score goals. And like midweek, on a day when that comes off, he looks top notch. But he's still very, very young. He's still learning and he's still making a lot of wrong decisions. He wants to do that every time rather than you know, when it's really, really on. And that obviously then leads to him having games where, like, some of... He shipped a lot of criticism in some of the recent Irish games, JDL, which I thought was way over the top. I thought he was decent.
Shane, he made the wrong decision of, 9 times out of 10. Like,
I don't know if it was 9 times out of 10. I agree. His decision making is without a doubt the weakest part of his game. Okay, without a doubt, it's the weakest part of his game. I just thought on one or two of those occasions, with a little bit more luck, it might have come off for him. And I think the last thing I would like to see is that approach that he has, that confidence in himself, and that wanting to go at players. I'd hate to see that bet out of him completely. I really, really would. I mean, I would be. You know, if I'm over a side who has a player that likes to dribble and likes to go at fellas, my general rule of thumb with them is, look, so long as you're doing it in the right area, if you're doing it in the final quarter of the field, final third of the field, if you go at him 4 times and the ball turns over 3, you lose the ball 3, but you go past him once and it creates a goal-scoring chance for yourself or for somebody else, I'll take that. I'll take that personally, so I will, as a general rule of thumb. Let the fellas behind be set up to try and be well structured for when the ball turns over. But I'd hate to.
Well, Guardiola now, would he accept a situation where one of his players has a 75% failure rate taking someone on? Would that be good enough for Guardiola?
No, but Guardiola is working with far superior players and far more technical players than Ireland have. Ireland need players who can do something out of nothing, Johnny. And I know at the moment it's not really coming off for him as much as he would like it to be coming off for him, but I still think he has it in him to be able to do really, really something out of nothing. Something out of nothing for Ireland, and I think we need that.
You'd hope that you get that from Jack Byrne as well, if he gets himself a club. He's gone from Nicosia now, and you'll have to wait until the next window. And Robbie Brady as well is looking for a club, David, I suppose. Have you been in that situation yourself before, where you're in between clubs and you're just trying to stay fit and just trying to keep your mind on things?
I'm very fortunate that I wasn't. When I left Hull, an opportunity came up straight away to go to Reading, which I jumped at, albeit, yeah, it didn't work out. I still had the opportunity to go and being kind of in and around it. And then that didn't work out. Coventry came to take me on loan. So I never really had that. Like, it's very difficult, you know, for Robbie. I actually met him in Dublin Airport. I don't know, would have been 6 weeks ago. And he just said there was a couple of offers, nothing concrete or whatever, which is disappointing because I still think there's still a hell of a player in Robbie. He's got a wonderful left foot, but he just needs to get himself in somewhere. Kind of somebody to put the faith into him that he can go and play. There was a lot of talk, I believe, of Swansea and Celtic. Then Russell Martin said that he didn't feel he needed him. Again, there you brought up Jack Byrne. It was an interesting one in moving over to obviously join Apoel. It's obviously not worked out for him, but now Jack's got to, I believe, am I right in saying he's got to wait till January before he can sign with the club? Is that right?
Here, yeah. Yeah.
So, like, that's Ireland or England. I don't know. Does he have something lined up elsewhere?
There was talk in the US. I'm not sure. Talk the US in terms of maybe a bridging move or whatever.
Okay, but still, like, what am I, 32? Jack must be, what, 26, 27 at his age now? Can't really afford to be, like, we're not even in October yet, but that's October, November, December. Like, those 3 months are crucial. Like, he has to look after himself if he wants to move back to the League of Ireland or over to England or Scotland. If that's what he's looking at, he needs to keep himself in, you know, top shape. Hopefully, if he does come home, he can get in training with someone where, I don't know if Shamrock Rovers would allow him to train with them, just to keep himself in shape, because he's in a really sticky situation. And in football, you can be forgotten about very easily. You know, this, once you start hitting the late 20s, early 30s, there's now a new crew coming through at, you know, 19, 20, 21, 22, pushing to, you know, get into first teams, and it can be very difficult to get clubs. So hopefully, you know, those two end up sorting themselves out sooner rather than later, because I still feel that they can offer a lot to Ireland.
I was talking about Ismail Assar. He scored for Watford, 1-1 against Newcastle now in the Premier League. And we've had a goal at Elland Road. Leeds 1, West Ham 1. Junior Firpo with an own goal. So West Ham have equalised Rafinha's opener for Leeds. Leicester 1, Burnley 2 is the latest. Everton 1, Norwich 0 is the latest, with Andros Townsend scoring for Everton from the penalty spot. And earlier on, Chelsea 0, Manchester City 1, and Manchester United 0, Aston Villa 1. I was just looking at the screen here. Gavin Bazunas, Portsmouth have gone 2-1 up away to Charlton.
Marcus Harness, who I believe is declaring for Ireland as well. So Portsmouth have a real Irish team going on there, JD.
Very good. 53106, if you want to get in touch, folks, with any texts or messages or opinions or questions for the lads. The Ryder Cup looks like it's going to be shared in the foursomes this afternoon. Our coverage with thanks to Sky Sports. Brooks Koepka and Daniel Berger trailing John Rahm and Sergio Garcia. So Europe 1-up through 14 in the opening match. USA are 2-up in the second match. Dustin Johnson and Colin Morikawa 2-up through 13 on Paul Casey and Tyrrell Hatton. Then Europe 1-up in the third match. Victor Hovland and Bernd Wiesberger after 13 holds against Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. And then the USA looking good in the last one. Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay 3-up on Lee Westwood and Matt Fitzpatrick through 11 holes. So if they share those 4 points, it would mean that going into the four balls later, USA would have 8 and Europe would have 4. But at the moment, it's 6-2. And Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk is back after this break.
Football on Off the Ball.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 in the company of David Myler, the former Republic of Ireland international, Shane Keegan, the pro licensed coach, and Johnny Ward, our broadcaster and journalist. To talk football until 5. Everton have scored again, 2-0 now against Norwich. Doucouré with the second goal. Really kind of sad story about James. It just hasn't worked out for him. He's gone off to Qatar. That really didn't work out. And a bit of a career that's fizzled out after so much promise in the 2014 World Cup. Leeds 1, West Ham 1, Leicester 1, Burnley 2 is the latest. Watford 1, Newcastle 1 earlier, Chelsea 0, Manchester City 1, and Manchester United 0, Aston Villa 1. 53106 for the texts. We're speaking about Jack Charlton. His style was the internationalisation of the position of maximum opportunity that Graham Taylor played with Watford. I was at Land's End for most of the games. The better sides like Spain and Portugal simply could not cope, but against worse opposition, the game was terrible. Rest in peace, though, Jack. He was wonderful for us, says Dave in Bray. Hey lads, a bit of perspective. I'm a Chelsea fan. City were very good today and won by a goal to nil, mainly due to bad organisation by Tuchel, which he admits the reverse was true in Champions League final. Chelsea won by a narrow margin because Pep made a mistake with the setup. These are the fine differences between two strong teams and two managers trying to outwit the other and counter their tactics. This will happen between these two clubs and Klopp's Liverpool throughout the season. Man U's problems seem much deeper and looking likely to be solved by Solskjaer, says Niall. And Clive from Westmeath, the Man U fan, has been in touch. Well, lads, I think Man U's problem is McFred playing in a double pivot in midfield. This isn't the answer. Paul Pogba in the centre with a proper central defensive midfielder could push United further. A proper wing on the left is also what we need, but it's too slow to get back up and back. Ole should have started Sancho on the left, would have given more pace on the wing. So thanks for your text in here on 53106. Just on the issue of standing areas, they're going to be bringing these back, apparently, in the Premier League, safe standing next season, Johnny. It took a long time, understandably so, we know the reasons, but I wonder how it will change an experience. I don't know if it will change it that much, because I remember in 2003 going to Spurs and everybody in the south stand was standing.
Yeah, I'd feel quite strongly in this, because I think, you know, I've been to games around Europe where, you've effectively seats where people stand, and that's not safe. So if the stewards can't compel people to sit down, which they can't really, you're better off having a situation where there is literally safe standing. Now, Hillsborough was like utterly catastrophic, but like Hillsborough was more about like complete ineptitude from the police and far too many people in a terraced area. Like we've all been to terraces in Gaelic Games matches, and they're totally safe. But I always feel that as you get older, maybe you're more inclined, if you're bringing kids to the game, you're happily sit down. But the cohort of fans who want to be behind the goal, they're better off standing. And I think if you're standing at a game, you're more participating, whereas if you're sitting, you're more a spectator, and it's much, much better for atmosphere. Because especially in cold nights, it's easier to stand up and kind of keep yourself warm than sitting on a chair. And standing, you can just create an atmosphere that literally just does not happen when people are sitting down, because they're less inclined to be part of the atmosphere. And I know there have been talks of potentially bringing alcohol back to to English football
inside of the pitch now. You can drink at English Premier League games in the concourse, but just not in front of the pitch.
Now, I think you could certainly make the debate either side about that, but I think the safe standing debate, they should definitely, definitely bring it back. And I'd be very, very confident it won't cause problems. And by the way, it'll help the atmosphere at Premier League grounds, of which a lot of the time isn't great. I mean, even today, these early games are complete snooze fest in terms of atmosphere sometimes. Like, they're not particularly memorable for a floating voter. I've been to Anfield, I've been to a lot of like English grounds, and I haven't been blown away. Anfield's amazing on European nights, but a lot of the time it's nothing to write home about.
Well, the first issue is safe standing. It has to be safe, obviously, and we live in a society in 20, notwithstanding what happened at the England-Italy European final, which was complete chaos. You'd have to think the Premier League has just been generally very well organised about getting people in a safe manner. And then the drinking issue, I don't know about the drinking issue in front of a pitch, because remember Aubameyang, what he did when he incited the Arsenal fans by running the whole length of the pitch to celebrate for Manchester City. They've just been throwing, they'd be throwing plastic glasses at him. And I don't know. I just think that might be a step too far. David Miter, where do you stand, if you excuse the pun, on all of this?
Look, I'm full agreement with you. I think it would create a better atmosphere at games. But of course, look, it has to be safe. If you could get, I don't know, you look at Dortmund, I think they have something crazy numbers-wise. There's a 30,000 stand up behind the goal and they create a great atmosphere. And that side of it, yeah, that would be fantastic if it's done properly. Like we see a lot of GA grounds, you can obviously stand in and you see how well that's done. Regards the drinking, it only takes one idiot, isn't it? You know, that's the big problem. You'd like to think in modern society that people would be respectful. This story you referenced there, the Adebayor one when he scored and he runs 70 yards just to slide in front of them. I think everything would have been thrown at him, but if I just can't see it working, unless they give plastic cups or something, so that.
Well, it'd have to be plastic cups. But even if it was plastic cups, you can just see a mess. You can just see this getting messy.
Yeah,
and also the GA doesn't have the feral tribalism that I sometimes see in English football.
It's true.
No, but it's that's the beauty of the GA, and people like, obviously I'm still living in England. They can't understand that you can go to Croke Park for an All Ireland final. If it was, say, for argument's sake, Cork and Kerry in the football or Cork and Kilkenny in the hurling, I could sit next to five Kilkenny people. They could all be with their jerseys on. I'd have my Cork jersey on and there wouldn't be any bother. They cheer when they score. I cheer when we score. There's never any drama, really, at the GA. You know, that's the beauty of it. In England, it's just, unfortunately, there's a lot of hooligans and thugs and people that just kind of go to, you know, work Monday to Friday, go to a game on the weekend to let their anger out, and then you just, some of them are just looking for tear-ups, which is wrong. So it's, if they can do the safe standing properly, then I'm all for it. That's the big issue.
Josh King has scored for Watford 2-1 against Newcastle now, Steve Bruce. And we also have another goal for Leicester, 2-2 against Burnley. This is in the Premier League. Jamie Vardy has scored an own goal and he's now scored twice to level up. I knew it was, by the way. Well, that's been an offside. Been given offside. Watford, Newcastle back to 1-1. We try to give you as soon as possible. So Watford 1, Newcastle 1 is latest, and Burnley 2, Leicester 2. I knew it was Adebayor by the way, who is for the person who's texting in the moment I said it. Shane Keegan, it was a sad week. And the reason why I say this about Jimmy Greaves is because so much is written about Barca and Brazil and the history of football and Hungary and the 50s. And I think all of that is amazing. I think anybody who's interested in the game should be interested in the history of the game. It's a personal choice. But Jimmy Greaves was hugely impactful in the history of football. Scored 44 goals in 57 games for England. Scored, I make it here, 366 goals across European leagues when he went to Milan briefly. Only Cristiano Ronaldo surpassed that only very, very recently. He had the dribbling ability, he had both feet, he had pace, he had that instinctive eye for goals. So as a historical figure in the game, who missed out on the ultimate high at the 1966 World Cup and then became, bizarrely, after beating alcoholism, and it was probably the best achievement of his life to win that struggle, he became then an avuncular TV personality on St. and Greavesy. So I think he was a huge figure in the game.
Look, absolutely no doubt about it, JD. You know, I remember from my childhood, I was big into videos, getting soccer videos, picking so whatever soccer videos I could get my hands on, and I was particularly into looking at some of the older stuff when I was a kid. And I suppose the two ones that he featured in the most were a video on Tottenham's greatest players, but there was also a match of the day, best of the 60s and 70s. And obviously he was huge on that as well. And he just, what an absolutely incredible player. Like it's the difference, the array of different kinds of goals that he was getting that I couldn't wrap my head around, JD. I remember the first time I was watching, trying to figure out, was he left-footed or right-footed? And, you know, I'd take a stab at he must have more perfect hat-tricks than anybody. Because the amount of times you'd see him getting 3+ goals in a game, and one would come right-foot, another would come left-foot, another would be a header, and one could have been a shot from distance, another could have been dribbled past 3 or 4 players. It was just every kind of goal that he was capable of getting. And look, I think he was voted into Spurs' greatest ever starting 11. He was voted into Chelsea's greatest ever starting 11. That's fair going to have two such rivals fans as that boat getting behind you. And as you say, went off to Italy and did superbly well out there as well. Goal scoring record holds up against anybody. Absolutely anybody. I think... pretty sure, I think himself and Shearer are the only players to win the Golden Boot or be top goal scorer in the top division 3 seasons in a row. Look, just an incredible player. He's a perfect example of the kind of player you would love to have transported and dropped into the modern game with all the fuss around the football that's there now. And what sort of a superstar, world football star would he be in the modern game?
It was lovely to hear John Giles talk about him as well, JD. And what I found fascinating was the way he John Giles would sometimes be playing against Greavesy. He would see him go through one-on-one and he couldn't get over how big he made the goal look. And I just thought it was a very interesting kind of description, because the striker, like, it was interesting, the game last night, Shane, Aaron Green threw one-on-one again against Yaros, and you don't expect him to score. It's been the story of his career, such a good player but not good in one-on-ones, and he made the goal look small. And the way he spoke about it, Greavesy would make the goal just expand all just the way he kind of, his body shape or whatever.
It was fascinating when that 1966 World Cup, what happened to him, in that he was the leading line player for England, played the 62 World Cup, played in all the group games, got a nasty injury against France. And then Geoff Hurst and Roger Hunt were the top two, and he didn't get his place back. So there's this photo of Jimmy Greaves the moment Geoff Hurst scores the hat-trick goal to make it 4-2 against West Germany, and Alf Ramsey's been congratulated, and Jimmy Greaves is just looking in the suit, haunted at what had transpired, because, as he said subsequently in an interview, he felt like the loneliest man. He told all his colleagues, we're going to win the World Cup. Nobody probably believed him. He was the main man. He scored all these goals for England. He was the top scorer in Division 1. And then at the moment where it should be the height of his professional life, it's just not there for him. I thought it was a fascinating recap that he did when it's on Twitter. It was a BBC thing I saw on Twitter during the week. So it was an interesting thing, and people might blame that for his struggles subsequently. I don't know if that's fair. But it must have been a very, very difficult one to take.
On that point as well, and I don't know, you see the big squads nowadays, but I still think in the player himself, I think it's very, very hard to celebrate when you think you should be playing and you're not. And whether you're friendly with your teammates or not. I certainly found this as a kid anyway. If I were dropped or whatever, like I might let on that I wanted them to win, but I'd selfishly not want them to win. And I think a lot of players are like that. And I think for Greaves, England had won the World Cup, but he hated it probably. And you know, I think that's still true of a lot of players.
David, you got very briefly. Did you hate it, or did you? Were you okay with it?
I won't say I hated it.
Was never dropped.
Yeah, no, I was. Look, I won the playoffs. I won the playoffs with Holland 2016. And I had played in the 40, including the playoff semifinals, there was 48 games. I think I played something like 35, 36, but I picked up a bad injury towards the end of the season. I don't know, was it my hamstring? And I came on the semifinal second leg against Derby, and I came on the final. But you can ask anyone in my family. I didn't celebrate as if they thought I would, because as much as I had been a huge part all the way out through the season, I played the semi-final, even played whatever 5-10 minutes of the final, it didn't feel the same for me. I was desperate for the lads to win, don't get me wrong. There wasn't like any ounce of me that wanted them to lose or anything, but it didn't feel the same. And I can tell you that hand on my heart. I felt off because I hadn't started the game. I was delighted for the lads and all that, but
yeah,
I wasn't right. It's just strange, even like looking back and thinking on it. I just didn't feel. It felt different.
You got to leave it there. We'll definitely get back to that, David. David Myler, Shane Keegan, thanks so much.
Cheers, lads.
And Johnny, thank you.
Thanks, JD.
Football on Off the Ball.